The threat from foreign terrorist organizations has remained a consistent threat for years. The threat level of these groups has fluctuated throughout the years. Nevertheless, NJOHSP continues to analyze the actions of foreign terror groups and their impact on New Jersey.
This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Welcome back to Intelligence Unclassified, a podcast about counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. Join us as we talk to local and national experts in these fields to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on current trends and issues facing our great state. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed, iTunes, or Google Play. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website, www.njohsp.gov.
Welcome to this week's episode of Intelligence Unclassified. In this episode of our 2020 Terrorism Threat Assessment Series, we will discuss the threat posed to the state of New Jersey from foreign terror organizations. I am joined in today's episode by fellow analysts Casey and Alyssa. This year, a few things have changed since 2019 in regards to FTOs, and one major change is the rankings. ISIS has changed this year and has been downgraded from moderate to low. Typically, when we talk about ISIS and their influence, all of the attacks that have been conducted in the United States that have been claimed or inspired by ISIS are typically captured under the homegrown violent extremists. So that is why ISIS as a group itself has been downgraded to low this year. ISIS has never successfully launched an attack in the United States and has only been able to motivate. While that's still a threat, that actual threat picture is captured under the high threat of HVEs, or homegrown violent extremists. Also in 2019, ISIS faced a few major changes organizationally. Its leader and main figurehead, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, was killed in a raid conducted by U.S. Special Operations Forces, while their main spokesman, Abu Hassan al-Muhajir, was killed in a drone strike shortly after. With all these changes and disruptions within ISIS, Casey, where are they likely to head in 2020, and where do we see the group in the future?
Well, Dylan, over the next year, we anticipate that ISIS will likely remain resilient and focus on insurgent operations, while also attempting to inspire Western attacks through their affiliates' activity and guidance. So, in 2019, ISIS demonstrated its ability to conduct operations across Africa after claiming responsibility for attacks in multiple African countries, including Libya, Nigeria, and Mali, to just name a few. We also saw the group establish new affiliates in Central Africa, Turkey, and India as well. It has also been observed that ISIS propaganda has moved away from discussions of life in the caliphate to focusing more on its global operations and attacks, so that, coupled with the activity in Africa, we see that it's been highlighted there's definitely been a shift in focus for ISIS. All of this activity is continuing on in the shadow of a major loss for ISIS after U.S. Special Operations Forces killed its leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, in a raid in a northwest Syrian village back in October. Since his death, multiple ISIS affiliates have pledged allegiance to the new leader, Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qurashi, which shows their continued dedication to the group even after the death of its prolific leader. So for 2020, we have assessed that ISIS will likely operate similarly under al-Qurashi by continuing global operations and contributing to various regional instability. Fighters could be reinvigorated by the death of al-Baghdadi and these new global presences to conduct operations eliciting the support of the U.S.-based homegrown violent extremists as well. So, coming up in 2020, there's a lot of potential to be had in the new year as far as ISIS and its new affiliates are concerned.
Thank you, Casey, for your outlook on ISIS and its affiliates. Another major change I see in this year's threat assessment is the addition of a group called Haras al-Din. Alyssa, could you tell us a little bit about what Haras al-Din is and why we added it to the threat assessment?
We added Haras al-Din, which is the al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria this year, after they became a designated foreign terrorist organization in September. It is recognized as al-Qaeda's official presence in Syria. They have both the intent and capability to attack the West, including against Americans and American interests. In September, the U.S. State Department offered a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the identification of senior leadership. In June and August of 2019, the Pentagon confirmed military strikes that were conducted against al-Qaeda leadership in northwest Syria, which remains a safe haven for the group to plot external attacks throughout the region and in the West. Just an aside about Haras al-Din, they became the Syrian affiliate after the official arm of al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, broke from al-Qaeda and formed HTS, which is a conglomeration of jihadist groups in Syria. So that's how Haras al-Din came to be. They were formed in 2018, and then they were officially acknowledged in 2019. So that's why we decided to add them to the affiliates this year.
Thanks, Alyssa. So speaking of al-Qaeda, we see on the threat assessment this year that al-Qaeda and its affiliates remained a low threat. I remember in 2019, al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, or AQAP, was lowered to low from moderate. But this year, it seems that all the al-Qaeda affiliates have just remained consistently on the low categorization. Can you discuss why and where do we see al-Qaeda heading into 2020 and beyond?
Al-Qaeda and its affiliates remain a low threat this year, which does not mean no threat. However, it means that they've been unable to conduct any external operations from overseas in the United States. And they've also been unable to conduct any attacks in Western Europe. The last one we've seen was Charlie Hebdo in 2015. We have seen less propaganda come out from al-Qaeda and its affiliates. And actually, the most active affiliate we've seen over the past year is al-Shabaab in Somalia. So that is where we've seen activity. And plus, Haras al-Din in Syria has also been very active. In 2020, al-Qaeda will continue to represent itself as the de facto leader of the global jihadist network by continuing to encourage attacks against Western countries, recognizing successes of the past and resiliency of affiliates, which they've done over the past year. They have heavily leaned on the affiliates to promote the group as a whole. Now, since the threat assessment was written, we know that at the end of January, the leader of AQAP was killed in a drone strike in Yemen. So that was Qasim al-Rimi, who had been head of AQAP since June 2015. He took over for Wahishi, who had been a founding member of AQAP. The United States had previously tried to conduct a raid to get al-Rimi in 2017, but they were unsuccessful, and it was thought that he was wounded in that particular raid, but he managed to live a couple of more years, and in January of 2020, he was in fact killed. We don't see this as having a very big effect on their operations.
Thanks, Alyssa. So we see that typically when al-Qaeda or ISIS want to acknowledge something like that, they put it out in propaganda. And I know this year we've seen a continuing decrease in the propaganda output from both of these major groups. While the groups have had a downfall in propaganda, we also this year saw twice as many homegrown violent extremists that were motivated by these groups heading into 2019. Alyssa, could you speak a little bit on that, on how these messages are still resonating, although these groups are failing to put out new propaganda?
I can speak to al-Qaeda's propaganda. They haven't put out anything really significant since 2017 or 2018. They haven't put out any Inspire magazines. They haven't put out anything in the English language. Al-Qaeda Core has put out an Arabic language in 2019, which was acknowledging their previous successes. And that is pretty much how they try to remain relevant. When they do push out any kind of propaganda, they rely heavily on that to inspire a new wave of jihadists to conduct an attack, like an HVE attack in the United States or elsewhere, and then claim it on al-Qaeda's behalf. So the old Inspire magazines, the old manuals that they've put out about building bombs and videos and items like that continue to resonate with supporters. And we still see that being used. When HVEs are arrested, we often find that they had some sort of manual or they had viewed videos on foreign terrorist organizations. So that's really how they try to continue to inspire their supporters.
So I know typically in the past, a lot of the ISIS propaganda has been them claiming attacks that may or may not have actually been affiliated with ISIS or motivated by ISIS, but the group will still try to claim those incidents. We saw, especially in 2017 and 2018, we saw ISIS trying to take responsibility for a lot of incidents that clearly had no nexus to them. As an example, the Las Vegas shooting back in October of 2017. So while ISIS mainly was doing that, I know that a lot of the propaganda now consists of claims of attacks worldwide from their affiliates. So a majority of the ISIS propaganda last year and probably into 2020 will continue to be claims of operations from its various affiliates, mostly in Afghanistan or in Africa. ISIS occasionally puts out statements from its leadership. They recently released a statement from its new spokesman, basically encouraging ISIS supporters to continue the fight. And a lot of it's the same type of message, still trying to claim that they are going to be what Al-Qaeda seems to have be pushing as well, is that they are the de facto terrorist organization in the world. While that's not new for ISIS to go ahead and claim incidents or attacks or violence, things that they want to sort of attribute to their name, we saw recently that Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula just claimed the Pensacola shooting. Now, it's going to be fairly significant that Al-Qaeda claimed an attack, because that's not typically their MO. Alyssa, could you go ahead and speak a little bit on that Pensacola shooting and how Al-Qaeda is sort of trying to either capitalize on it and what your thoughts are on their attribution to the attack?
On December 6, 2019, there was a shooting at a Pensacola Naval Air Station, and it was conducted by an aviation student from Saudi Arabia. The shooter, Second Lieutenant Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamrani, a member of the Saudi Air Force, opened fire inside a classroom at the base, killing three people and wounding two sheriff's deputies before one of the deputies killed him. In addition to the two deputies, six other people were wounded in the attack. On February 2nd, AQAP claimed responsibility for the Pensacola attack on December 6th. What is interesting is that in the 18-minute video narrated by Kasim Al-Rimi, who is now deceased, indicated that he was in communication with the attacker from Pensacola, and they also claimed to have a will of Al-Shamrani's and that he had wanted to attack the United States. As far as whether this is valid, whether this was inspired, directed, there's really not a lot of proof that he was directed by AQAP or that he had been in direct contact with them. According to the FBI, Al-Shamrani did not appear to be motivated by one particular foreign terrorist organization. However, his social media posts referenced AQAP, radical cleric Anwar al-Awlaki. It's unusual that AQAP would take so long to release that statement since the attack happened in December and they didn't release it until February 2nd. However, we know that al-Rimi was killed at the end of January, therefore it could have been recorded and they just didn't put it out until after his death because they wanted to make it appear that he was still alive. That could be one reason. Another reason is that maybe they didn't have any proof and were just looking for something. That could be a reason, but we really aren't sure. It's just one of those cases where we don't really know what happened.
It is interesting that Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula would take that long to go ahead and claim the attack. So like Alyssa said, it is possible that they wanted to maybe somehow manipulate the public in thinking that Rimi might still be alive. But I guess, you know, more information about that will probably come out. Thank you very much for joining us on today's episode of Intelligence Unclassified. I want to thank Alyssa and Casey for joining us on this episode to talk about ISIS and Al-Qaeda. For more information on these groups and the analysis of NJOHSP, you can go ahead and read our 2020 threat assessment. It's out. It's on the website. You can find it under the Analysis Products tab online at njhomelandsecurity.gov. Also, feel free to subscribe to the podcast and listen to the other episodes in our 2020 threat assessment series. Thank you again for joining us. Intelligence Unclassified, signing out.
All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njohsp.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.